This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack. But with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Watley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. There you'll find a lot of great companies to do business with. We have a help box right there on our homepage. You can send us an email through there. And, of course, our helpline is always open, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Today it's the Legal Hour with our good friend Kevin Flesh, Flesh and Beck Law. Their number, 303-806-8886, 303-806-8886. Today we're going to cover really kind of three topics with this. We're going to talk about preparing your case for trial, why picking the right lawyer is so important, and then how to maximize your recovery. We will probably not get through all of it today, but we might have to make this a part two series. But, you know, there is a lot, Kevin, and we always talk about in the value that a personal injury attorney in your case that you bring, I feel like. And first of all, figuring out, is there a case?
Right.
Because we both get those calls. I've made a lot of calls and no attorney will take my case. I'm like, well, that's because you don't have a case in most cases.
You know, what's really interesting about that is I'm always amazed, because I get those calls a couple a week probably where they'll say exactly that. And the attorneys, they say, the person calls me and says, well, they just said they didn't have time. Or, you know, they give the attorney that they've already talked to has given other excuses as to why they won't take their case. And I'm really upfront with people because I think people, these free consultations that we give, are number one, are certainly something that we're looking to see if it were compatible.
Sure.
But secondarily, it's also a time where people are really wanting to know, does this case have viability or not? And you know, there are certainly some strong cases out there where you say absolutely. But then there's some things that, you know, I get a call a week from someone who's had a difficult time at one of the University of Colorado hospitals or facilities, for example, or Denver Health. Well, both of those entities are governmental entities, and so they're immune from suit for negligence. Mm-hmm. So, but people don't tell these individuals, generally, the other lawyers, why they won't take the case, because there's no case, right? But I explain to the people, cite the statute, and say, you know, we've been dealing with these cases for the last 20, 25 years with regard to the Governmental Immunity Act. There's just no way to get around it. And I explain that to them. And so I think we add value in that sense of talking through the case. And at least people, when they go away, they don't like necessarily what I say sometimes, but they at least understand what's going on. And sometimes that's just the situation. I mean, sometimes people need to explain exactly what the situation is. And maybe it's not a legal issue in the sense of you don't have a case because the legislature hasn't given you that option. But sometimes it's what can you prove? And when you talk about the case itself, the person emotionally has a real hard time understanding why they can't move forward with it. And a lot of times it's, well, what can I prove? And what evidence do you have to prove your theory or to prove your gut reaction as to what happened?
Mm-hmm.
It's much like, we don't do much employment law anymore, but when I was doing a lot more of employment law, people would come and they would say to me, well, I think my employer is discriminating against me. And you'd say, okay, that's your premise as to what happened with you losing your job. Now, how can you prove that? What is it in evidence that they've given you that you can say to a judge or a jury, listen, these are the specific things that they've done that indicate they're biased against me because of some sort of impermissible reason, right? And normally what it is the people will say, well, I just feel that way. Well, that doesn't get you anywhere,
mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, because you really have to prove that. And in federal court and state court, you'll get a summary judgment motion relating to the fact that, well, the plaintiff may feel that way, but they've got to present something, you know, documents, witness testimony, something that's going to indicate that those facts are present, and they just aren't there. And so when people call, and that's why the call is so important, because the person doesn't lose anything other than a little bit of time talking with me. But sometimes people are afraid to do that because they don't want the bad answer.
Mm-hmm.
But at least the majority of the time we can do something. But when you can't, then I at least explain to them why we can't. I had one yesterday. Fella fell down at a grocery store in town. He had already had a MCL tear, so a knee, you know, the ligament in your knee, one of the ligaments, was torn from a prior injury. Well, he says that he hurt that more when he fell. Well, the problem is with that MCL tear, based upon his medical records, he needed to have surgical intervention. It wasn't going to really heal on its own. He was doing some physical therapy, but he really wasn't doing anything out of the ordinary to fix it other than what he needed was surgery. Well, then he fell. So then we had the conversation about, yes, we could prove liability. That's not a problem. But the problem is what's your damage, really? Because you already had this torn ligament in your knee. It wasn't torn anymore because he had an MRI after the fact. And we had the MRI before that showed it. So there was an example of where we had a conversation. I said, I think if they're offering you any money, you need to take it.
Yeah.
Right? And I can't come into the situation and get you more other than filing suit. And by the time we got done with the expert fees or costs and the filing fee and my fees, you're going to end up with a lot less. So take what you can and move on. And
more careful.
Well, yeah, and get your MCL fixed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, get the surgically fixed and get it taken care of. And don't, you know, in that situation, he really wanted to make a big deal of it. But at the end of the day, that particular client, if I would have signed them up, he would have been really disappointed in the result because the defense was certainly going to be able to make all kinds of hay with the fact that, hey, you already had this knee problem before you fell.
Sure.
So how much more damage was there when it was torn to begin with? So those are the sorts of conversations that are interesting to have because a lot of times they are good cases, and a lot of times we can help people. And good in the sense that we can add value and get people money.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to get people to understand when they really feel like, you know, something has happened where they were wronged or whatever. Even we get calls into Haystack Help, that's one of the first questions I ask. One, what do you want, and what are your damages?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sometimes they're like, well, it is this, but that's not really a damage or a different thing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, there are many times where, and I've got a case that's set for trial the middle of September, where my client is very upset with the person that caused him injury, the entity. And I think it's less about the money. He wants to exact some revenge, right? And unfortunately, revenge really doesn't have any value to a jury. Because when you get in front of a jury, the jury just, it's kind of like the facts, right? They want to understand the process. And my experience with jurors is they don't get wrapped up too much in the emotional side of a dispute between these parties that are trying the case in front of them. And a lot of plaintiffs, a lot of folks that I have represented, have a hard time understanding how their feelings aren't going to impact the jury. I mean, it will to some degree,
right. But
unless you can't expect that jury, at least half of them, to, I mean, because it's an adversarial process. So if the defendant's lawyers think that a person is going to be empathetic, is going to have some empathy to the plaintiff, they're going to get rid of that person on the jury. And so you're going to end up with people between the plaintiff and the defendant that are pretty like-minded in this normally,
mm-hmm.
so that you end up with pretty pragmatic people, I think. And the emotionality is just taken away. And when you take away that, in a lot of these cases, your value for the plaintiff goes away.
Right.
Other than they get their day in court and they get to, you know, explain why the other party has done these things and have a feeling like they've been able to vent, which there's some value sometimes to that.
Sure.
But for a contingency fee case, it doesn't really help
right.
me and the folks that do this sort of work, because we want to get people money, because that's at the end of the day, I wish I could undo what happened, but 9 times out of 10 you can't do that. You're just trying to get them compensation for their injuries and their losses.
Right. Kevin Flesh is with us, Legal Hour. If you've got any questions, our lines are open, 303-477-5600. We'll take on any legal question you may have. So when we talk about getting someone a fair recovery, and we use that word fair, but man, I mean, you've seen it multitudes of times probably over your career where you either walk in thinking, boy, this is going to be really good, and then the jury goes some other direction, or the direction where you think, maybe I don't have much, but I'm going to give it a shot, and then all of a sudden jury 1,000% agrees with
right.
you.
Right. Yeah, it happens both ways. The trouble is that the plaintiff, the person that I'm representing, always takes on all of that risk. And that's substantial sometimes, especially when you consider the costs of, especially where you have someone that has significant injuries and they have 10 treating providers. And so you've got to pay for all of those doctors to come in and testify at trial. I mean, those costs, you know, generally speaking, for a doctor to testify, it's anywhere from $2,500 to $5,000 for trial. And that's not money you get back unless you win the case. Mm-hmm. So if you don't, you've just spent money that you're never going to recoup. And that's really hard, just that aspect of it, because you know, it's like going to It's like going to Central City, or it's like going to Vegas and rolling the dice, and you get one roll and you put all of your chips on the table and you see what happens. And that's difficult because most people have never been through that. And that's something that I ask my clients a lot of times when we're in a situation where we're going to mediation. And during the course of the mediation, we'll have a conversation about risk. Most people can't really envision what a trial looks like because they haven't been through it. And the best way that I can describe it is going to one of those establishments where you're gambling, not having control of anything, putting all of that money on there and saying, give me six dice, you know, because that's normally six people in the jury, and then rolling it so that they're all the same, mm-hmm. so that they come to a conclusion that you're satisfied with. And in normal life, are you that sort of person? Are you willing to, and some people are. Some people are gamblers, and they like that, and they like the thrill of it, which is fine.
Right.
But they have to understand most people aren't. Most people are, let's really talk about the risks, the rewards, and at the end of the day, what is it worth for me to take on that additional incremental risk, and what am I going to get, and how many sleepless nights, and how much is it going to impact my life at the end of the day? Because if you're talking about a $10 increase in the offer or what a jury awards you, but you've got to put up $100 to get that extra $10. Most people don't want to do that.
Right.
That makes complete sense. And so those are the sorts of things that we have in our discussions with people. And a lot of times we resolve the cases because it makes sense to do that. Because the other side, the insurance company many times, has tried this same case throughout the nation 100 times, and they know they've got the statistics on what they think the value is going to be, and so they're always a little bit lower than we are, and you work that out.
Because it's really not fair to what you think or I think is your client. You got to figure out what that fair word is to those six people, and getting six people to think the same way. I mean, if you had six people ask where do you want to go to dinner,
yes.
You can't figure that out, much less trying to get all the different
facts
and feel the same about an outcome.
Right. And a lot of clients will be like, well, you're articulate. You should be able to explain to them and advocate for me and get exactly what I want. But yeah, I can't be in the jury room while they're deliberating. We put on the best case we can, and certainly I think we do a good job in increasing the value of those things, but you just don't know.
Right.
And that's the trouble when you're going through this process, is the idea. I think of a mediator recently, we talked about it with the client, and the client was talking about fairness. And the mediator said, listen, the definition of fairness in this regard is what are six people going to give you if you go to trial? Because that's really the level of fairness of what you're going to get, and that nobody knows. But we have some indicators throughout the state relating to jury verdicts, and that gives us some pause as to what it may or may not be in the way of value. Because if you go with, well, as a victim in a car accident, what I think is fair is very different than the person that hit you's value of fair. And so that's the debate.
It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. When we come back, we're going to talk about this. How does emotion play into the evaluation of damages? There's good emotion and bad emotion. We'll be right back.
Take AIM. Affordable Interest Mortgage has been offering the asset manager all-in-one loan for over 11 years. We are experienced in helping homeowners pay thousands less in interest on their mortgage, own their home faster, all without spending one dime more. 720-895-0500. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, where we have hundreds of clients that have been using this loans to build their equity faster, access emergency funds when necessary, and pay off their home in 8 to 13 years versus 25 to 30. People initially believe this loan is too good to be true, but it is true. Call 720-895-0500 now to see if you qualify. Loans from $100,000 to $2.5 million, same rate. Ask our previous clients. They will tell you it works. Call 720-895-0500 and work with the experts. This loan has been around since 1965. Affordable Interest Mortgage, where it's all about you. 720-895-0500. Regulated by DORA, NMLS 298191, Equal Credit Lender.
Tired of walking into your local gun store and seeing the same old thing? Hey, let me tell you about Rampart Firearms. You'll find a great selection of guns, ammo, tactical, and personal defense weapons. Rampart Firearms is also a great stop for all of your hunting and shooting needs. Shotgun, rifle, or pistol, from predator hunting to your next big game trip, Rampart Firearms is located in Douglas County at the foot of the Rockies, just a quarter mile up Highway 67 off of Santa Fe in Sedalia. They're open Monday through Saturday, 10 to 7, and hey, you'll only pay 4% tax on your purchase. Rampart Firearms, 720-468-0050. That's 720-468-0050. Or visit them at rampartfirearms.com.
What could you do with an extra $500, $1,000, or even $1,500 per month? How would that change things for you? Would you buy a new car, pay off bills, or just feel a bit more secure about your retirement? What if I told you there's a way to make your dreams a reality? I'm talking about trading and investing in the market. Now, before you say, oh, that's not for me, just hear me out. I want to invite you to a half-day trading course so you can check this out. I promise you, you'll go away smarter than when you came in. We here at Online Trading Academy sponsor this, and we'll even send you home with a free home study video guide. Your money's doing nothing for you in a CD or mutual fund. Learn how to profit when the market's up or down. Call us now while seats are still available at 303-325-2776. Use offer code RADIO50. 303-325-2776. That's 303-325-2776.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. You're just joining us. My name is Scott Watley, along with Kevin Flesh. Flesh and Beck Law, once again, their number for that free consultation Kevin spoke of earlier, 303-806-8886. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Jeff on the line. Jeff, how are you, sir?
Doing just great, sir.
How can we help you?
I've got an issue going on with the county down here, Douglas County. I've been providing aerial support with them for the last 11, 12 years and flying my helicopter off my ranch, which apparently is in violation of the ordinances here. I applied for rezoning, and the Planning Commission voted 6-1 to approve it, but the Board of County Commissioners voted 2-1 to throw me off the property. And I'm just wondering if I have a leg to stand on. They sent me a letter of abatement giving me 90 days to vacate the property with a lot of language in there that just almost sounds threatening. Like, if I don't sign this and get it back right away, they're going to make me vacate immediately.
So
my
so are you leasing the premises?
No, I own it.
So how can they make you leave it if you own it?
Because the use of the helicopter commercially on the property is not within their ordinances.
Okay. But aren't they just asking you to stop that activity on the premises?
Yes, that's it. They're just asking me to take the business off the property. They're not throwing me off the property.
Okay. All right. And so, and you have a commercial business that uses the helicopter besides allowing the county to use the pad there as well?
We own the helicopter. We contract with the county for search and rescue, fire support, things of that nature. But we also do commercial work for the power lines, which is an agreement we have with the county, because we give them the helicopter at a greatly reduced cost,
yeah,
well below the commercial rate. Ironically, they're telling me that if they approve my zoning application, had they approved it, I would be setting a precedence or opening a Pandora's box. And when I said, well, wait a minute, for the last 12 years, you've been sending me contracts to do so. Your own commissioners have come up to the property, gotten in the aircraft.
Yeah.
Your assessor's office is charging me commercial taxes to operate out of here, but yet now I'm illegally here.
So are those three board members you said it was 2-1 vote that not to approve?
Yeah.
So, those three individuals, did they understand your relationship with the county before they voted?
They're the ones who signed the contracts that they send to me every year.
Wow. So, do you think that there's something afoot that they're trying to have some other venture provide them helicopter support then? I mean, what do you think is motivating them to not approve the variance?
Okay, I know that the two key items on the list, and I don't believe I have it in front of me here, have there been any substantial changes to the neighborhood since the last rezoning, which was 1999? Well, I don't know if you know Castle Rock, there's been pretty substantial changes since 1999.
Right.
And is the land use application copacetic, essentially, with the rest of the land uses around here?
Right.
Well, the only difference between my tractor and the neighboring tractors is mine leaves the ground and theirs doesn't, at least not on purpose.
Okay, but I mean, has there been a lot more development of the area where they're concerned about safety relating to the helicopter?
No.
Or noise?
I have an FAA-approved heliport license to be here. They come once a year and inspect it, so there's no safety issue. Where it all began is a gentleman that lives in the subdivision to the south of us claimed and wrote a false complaint, not even using his entire name. He only used a portion of his surname. Sent in a complaint that we were flying over his house on almost a daily basis, essentially.
Yeah.
And I've got automated flight following my aircraft, and when we ran a 365-day report, we've never been within 0.54 miles and have never crossed the fence line into that subdivision, with one exception when there was a fire back in there. And when there's fires, that's an emergency situation. We can all rules go out the window during an emergency.
Sure.
Do what you have to do. So
sure.
We've always played by the books. We've got an outstanding reputation with the FAA. We just had one guy who filed a false claim, and then the next door neighbor, for whatever reason, after 12 years, jumped on board with them.
Okay. So the question that I have for you is, you've gotten this denial, basically, of your application. Is there an appeal process that you can go to the full board then after?
Well, yes, there is. But unfortunately, the way the appeal works here is you go to the Board of Adjustments, and the Board of Adjustments is the same three people that just denied you.
Okay, but that's fine. Then is there a secondary appeal after that, or do you have to go to the district court to review it for process?
Well, unfortunately, I've had a heck of a time getting any attorneys to return my calls. I've been calling attorneys on a daily basis, and nobody seems to return my calls.
Well,
what I want to ask about is CRCS 106A4, which is essentially an appeal to the state level.
Correct. So the way it works with these administrative processes, generally speaking, the way it works is you've got to go burn all the way down to the ground relating to everything that the agency does, and in this case, the board of directors for the county. So you've got to exhaust all of your levels of appeal there. And then if you can prove that there's something legally that they've done improperly in regards to the rules or some other abusive process, that's where you can go to the district court in Douglas County to have it reviewed. So that's the process that you have to go through.
But the first process would be to go ahead and file an appeal with the Douglas County.
With the folks that have made the initial decision, and then back to them if that's who it is. And then I'm hoping you can get to the full board. And then this is more of a political issue in my mind than a legal one, because you're going to want to get support of folks around in your neighborhood, have a study done that you're not impacting those individuals with real property in the neighborhood. And on balance, what you're doing is helping more than hurting, you know, the environment around your area.
Sure, and I have an excess of 500 to 600 responses from, let's just say, a 3-mile radius, a 4-mile radius of my home. Every single one of them in support of the helicopter, not one negative.
Yeah. So,
as a matter of fact, people are wanting to start a protest. They're wanting to.
Yep.
Petition.
Right.
I've got 100% support.
So that's where you want to do the appeal, and you want to move it forward, because while you're doing that, appeal process, I don't think they're going to stop you from doing your business and moving forward until, you know, all of these appeals have been exhausted.
Okay. Can I read something to you real quick?
Sure.
This is what they told me in this latest letter of abatement allowing me to stay till October 24th.
Yeah.
By entering into this agreement, the owner waives any right to an appeal, to appeal the determination the property is in violation of Douglas County zoning resolution, as described in Section 1. Owner agrees to not appeal the Board of County Commissioners' decision, on and on. If the owner elects to appeal, then this agreement is void.
Yep.
This agreement is binding, blah, blah, blah. So
right.
Basically what they're saying is, if I appeal it, they're going to throw me out tomorrow.
Well, they can't, because you'll be able to get a judge to stay it while the appeal is pending.
Okay, great.
forward until...
Okay, that's so, exactly what I want to hear. So essentially sort of like an injunction.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you'll be asking for equitable relief in the event that you have to go through the district court to stay at... I mean, you've been there for 12 years. There's nothing to indicate that there's a new circumstance that's causing any harm to anyone at this point. It's just a decision that the board has made, and then you get to decide how far you want to take it to appeal the decision. So it's certainly one of those things you can call my office and set an appointment to come in, and we can talk through it. But that's I'm surprised that someone with land use hasn't been willing to talk to you, because it's an interesting issue.
Yeah, very.
I've been having a hell of a time just even getting through to anybody. And what was your name again?
Yeah, my name is Kevin Flesh, and the firm is Flesh and Becklaw.
Flesh like it sounds?
Yeah.
F-L-E-S-C-H.
And the phone number is 303-806-8886. When a real human being answers the phone, you can schedule a time. She's got my calendar, so the receptionist, Crystal, perfect, should answer the phone. So
I appreciate that, and I will be in touch.
Sounds good.
And Jeff, we'll do a ride in a helicopter sometime.
Yeah, that'd be
fun, too. I'd love
to
do that.
I think we may have to see how noisy it is as we're going over your neighbors.
I'll tell you right now, unless you've been in an old Huey, it's not like you're going to have a lady with a cart coming down the aisle serving beverages.
No, even better. You want the real deal.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, Jeff, we appreciate you listening. And give Kevin's office a call, man.
Yep.
I'll do it, and I appreciate all the help.
All right. Thank you. All right. Oh, a few minutes before a break, and again, our lines are open, as you can tell.
It's an interesting, so you wonder.
You got three people that signed a contract that you've been doing business with for years.
There's something else going on. I don't want to say too much because I may have to help him, but right. There's always, when you have those sorts of stories, there's always, what's the rest of the story? Mm-hmm. Paul Harvey sort of thing. This is the rest of the story.
Because there will be the rest of the story.
Yeah, that's an interesting problem.
Right. All right, Kevin, before our break there, first break there, we talked about, you know, how emotion plays into our cases when we talk about getting a fair recovery and into evaluation of damages.
Yeah, so many times, again, the old adage, you know, if you represent yourself, you have a client as a fool, or a fool as a client, something like that. And the idea is that when you have a claim like this and you're injured personally, you always probably don't have the best ability to make a determination about what the value of your case is, because everybody feels like they've been wronged in that situation. I mean, there's always that aspect of it that that helps you motivate yourself to get better, and also causes you to think that potentially that the case is worth more than it is. And where we talk about good emotion versus bad emotion, so the good emotion is the emotion that motivates you to get help, and both from a legal standpoint and from a medical standpoint, and to get yourself back to where you were just before the accident in the way of your life. And that's the good part of what people go through, and people that are functioning in their lives before that. The bad emotion is when this accident kind of compounds some other problems that you've had. Maybe you just have some issues anyway in regards to a mental health issue or anxiety or some other things that may be affecting your life anyway. And then you inject an injury or some other damage to your life that just throws you for a complete loop. And those situations, a big real legal term there, loop. But but my point is that everybody knows what we mean, is that if you're kind of just on the edge all the time, and then you get this injury, and then it just completely mm-hmm. puts you into a tailspin. We all know people that are like that. Now, the question is should all of that tailspin be considered damages for a case where a person just is accidental and hits you? You know, obviously, my clients always want to say that everything should be included.
Right.
But it doesn't always happen that way. And those are the sorts of discussions that we have in trying to help people. Because if people get so invested in their case that all they want, they have a hangnail that's been a problem, and they want $1 million for that hangnail, you know, they're going to look silly in front of a jury, and they're going to get less than what they've even thought was possible or nothing. And so those are the sorts of things that we talk with people about to really help them understand the system, because most people that haven't, they're just not in the system, and they don't understand sort of how insurance companies work and how doctors work through this whole thing and how the legal system it affects their lives, and because no one enjoys the legal process.
Right.
And so we're there hopefully from the beginning, because that's when we can really help people day two after the accident through resolution of the case.
Sure. It's the Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. Our lines are open. Give us a call, 303-477-5600. We'll be right back.
You're spending too much time and energy on insurance. Don't stress. Group Insurance Analysts will shop the entire market for you in one report. No gimmicks or fees, just honest help and guidance through a local, proven, and independent broker. Group Insurance Analysts handles all type of insurance. Benefits, workers' comp, property, auto, and more for both business and personal needs. Call Haystack Help Radio official registered company Group Insurance Analysts today. You never need to stress about insurance again. Call 303-423-0162. That's 303-423-0162. Or visit e-gia.com. That's e as in easy, -gia.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley for my friends at Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center. Listen, I've trusted my pets to Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center for over 11 years, and you can too. At Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center, they believe all pets deserve to have a good life. Whether your furry friend needs a checkup, advanced medical care surgery, boarding, grooming, obedience training, food, care products, or hey, just toys, Lone Tree Veterinary Medical Center has you covered. Open 7 days a week for your convenience, and they're located at 8681 East Lincoln Avenue in Lone Tree. Learn more at LoneTreeVet.com or give them a call, 303-708-8050. That's 303-708-8050. Tell them Scott sent you.
Procrastination and hesitation yield the same result, no meaningful decision. Steve Hurley here at Affordable Interest Mortgage. Questions and concerns regarding reverse mortgages need to be addressed. I can help. My main job is educating those that want to understand the value and benefits of considering such a mortgage. Remember, take AIM at 720-895-0500 and ask for me, Steve Hurley. NMLS number 243200, regulated by DORA, an equal opportunity lender.
Let me tell you about one of my favorite stores, The Outdoorsman's Attic, a consignment store for all of your adventure outdoor gear. Hunting, fishing, camping, kayaks, live bait, survival gear, backpacks, sleeping bags, firearms, and ammo. Save 20, 30, 40, and even 50% on new and pre-owned items at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Mention Sportsman of Colorado and save up to 20% on your purchase. This offer excludes firearms and ammo. Never pay retail again. Big savings and friendly service is what you'll find at The Outdoorsman's Attic. Located at 2650 West Hamden Avenue in Sheridan. 303-781-3626. That's 303-781-3626. Check them out, outdoorsmansattic.com.
Got a question for the station? Email info at CrawfordBroadcasting.com. Now back to Haystack Help Radio.
And we are back. You're listening to The Legal Hour with Kevin Flesch. Once again, Flesch and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. And Kevin will be glad to help you out. Kevin, we haven't done this in a little bit. Let's reset a little bit and talk about all that you offer and different things with criminal law as
well.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sure. So, yeah, we generally talk about personal injury cases and civil matters in this context. But yeah, so we're a litigation firm. We try cases both in the civil side, so asking for money damages or injunctive relief, things like that that we were just talking with Jeff about. And then we also deal with criminal defense matters. So everything from we do a bunch of municipal court work to county courts, DUIs, assault, domestic violence, all of those sorts of criminal cases that you deal with in both county and district court throughout the state. And so we continue to grow both aspects of the practices. And as we know, Lori came on this year and is a named partner now. She's been with us almost 13 years. And I've got five other associates that are working on different things throughout the practice. And so it's really good. We really enjoy helping people, as we talk about on the show, adding value, and then trying some good cases. And so that's really what we enjoy doing and helping people through the process, trying not to overly complicate things, because people come to us to solve problems, right?
Sure.
And sometimes you can only do that through the litigation process. Either you're trying to get money that people won't pay you, or you're trying to get out of a jam that someone has made allegations against you and you're trying to prove your innocence, that sort of thing. And so those are the sorts of folks that we help primarily.
Right. So let's talk about real quick on picking the right attorney.
Yeah.
Because, boy, competitive field.
Very competitive. There's lots of people out there.
Boy. Buses, park benches, TV, radio, everything.
Geofencing. So, yeah. I mean, we're doing it all.
Yep.
I mean, especially on the personal injury side. You don't see it as much on the criminal defense side, but the personal injury cases, I don't know how people do it. I mean, other than sitting down with the lawyer that you're deciding to hire and having a conversation and making sure that at the end of that meeting that you trust them implicitly, mm-hmm. in the sense that you're going to make sure that this person, whoever you choose, is the one that you say, you know what? This is the person that I'm certain is going to do the best for me and I'm comfortable moving forward. And the thing that I see that's just so surprising to me is that many times people will call or they'll say, I've already made a decision about an attorney. And I say, well, have you actually met with the attorney that's handling the case? And they say, no, but I'm going with this firm. And I say, okay. And I try to have a discussion with them about it because most of the bigger personal injury case firms, for example, they don't have the lawyer meet with the client. They have a case manager, or they have a paralegal, or they have a person that's doing the intakes meet, and you never actually get to see the person that's actually going to litigate the case until months or years later. And so I just want to make sure that people understand that when, at least when you come to our firm, the lawyer that you meet with will be the lawyer that you'll have throughout the case.
Right.
And our firm is very linear in the sense that some firms you go, you start out in the pre-lit department, and so you'll have a group of people that you'll get to know that'll help you through the process once you get to the point where you make a demand to the insurance company. That group will take care of it. And if they can't get it resolved, then you move on to a second part of the firm, which is the litigation side of the firm. Well, you've never met any of those people. And we get lots of clients from these firms where the people are just so annoyed with that first part, that pre-lit part, because they're not getting calls back. They just don't feel like the service is very good. And so they'll come to us anyway because they think, well, I've got to restart my story anyway with that other firm because they weren't able to resolve it, and I've got to file suit. So I might as well start with folks that seem to care,
right.
And they seem to have good customer service, because those are things I think are really important. You've already been hurt in this accident. You don't need to continue that feeling like you're a second-rate citizen because of what your lawyer is doing with, mm-hmm. with the way that they handle their practice. And so those are the things that I think are important. And the only way you do that is by sitting down with a person or talking with them at length over the phone or sitting down for coffee somewhere. And those are the sorts of things we're willing to do to help people.
Right. And I always like to talk about, too, if someone has tried to handle all this on their own and maybe they're currently in negotiations with an insurance company and they've got an offer on the table, that is still something you will do a free consultation with to see if you can add value. In other words, if you're close to settling and you think you've reached all you could with the insurance company.
Right.
It's worth the phone call and a sit down visit.
It is. And matter of fact, I just settled a case this week in which the person had a car accident, low impact case, and they had some money on the table. And when they came in a year ago, I said, I think we can do better than what they're offering you. And so we filed suit on their behalf. They came in, they retained us. And I said, in the fee agreement, we're not going to take a percentage of the amount that you already have on the table, because I haven't done anything to be awarded those mm-hmm. fees. So we put that specifically in the fee agreement, that anything above that number, we would get a percentage. And so we filed suit. We went through the discovery process. We went through mediation. We finally settled it. And that's exactly what we did. We got more money for them. We're taking the percentage and the costs that we've had to put into the case. And they're satisfied with the result.
Sure.
You know, so it's one of those situations where absolutely we can do that. I've also had it where the guy, like I was talking about with the MCL this week, whereas I don't think we're going to be able to do anything more, and I don't want to say that we can and then not have him actually have the results, you know, positive results, and get less money. So go settle it and get it taken care of yourself.
Right.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's why we've been in the area for so long, and that's why I want to continue to be here, because I think it's important. I mean, I think, you know, the metro area is a big area, but it's still my neighborhood. And so it's still an area that I want to be able to look people in the eye and treat everyone fairly throughout the whole process. And not everybody works that way. You know, not everyone does business that way. And so that's the sort of questions you need to ask when you're making a decision about a lawyer.
What are a few things that come to mind that people can do, let's say once they've retained you, that they can do that can hurt their case?
Yeah.
You know, one thing we jokingly talk about, but is very real, is social media.
Yeah, so social media can be a real detriment. and what I mean by that is, in the event that you have a case where you say, for example, the client says, I can't walk two blocks without having significant pain, and I can't do these other things in life. And then when they put on their Facebook that they've been at a wedding and they have a 10-minute video of them dancing at the wedding, that doesn't make them look very good. Mm-hmm. And defense counsel immediately goes out on the web and looks for anything for individuals relating to Facebook and all the other, Instagram, all of those things. And if all of that is public, if you have it in the public realm, that it's fair game. And they won't give us notice of that until you're sitting in their, potentially their conference room for a deposition, and then they'll surprise you with it. And they'll set it up so that you, you know, woe's me, I've got all these problems, and then they'll show you this video and then start asking you questions about it. And it's devastating for people. And it's things that you can work through mm-hmm. that people don't have to do. You don't, you know, when you get into a car accident, you have to remember that somewhere down the road, you may be telling a jury about what's taken place to you. And I'm not saying that you need to be dishonest about
sure,
it.
Sure, sure.
But you don't need to make it easy for the defense in the sense of what's been going on with you and how you're physically reacting to things. And those, you know, a picture's worth a thousand words.
Right.
And jurors, when I first started practicing, if I had a client that did a slip and fall, for example, and they had a picture of the area where they fell, the jurors would immediately say, well, that person just set up this landowner and they must be looking for a lawsuit. Now it's completely flipped. Mm-hmm. If I don't have a picture of the area so that I can show it to a juror, they don't think it happened. You know what I mean? In the sense of what the area looked like, because we're all carrying phones around. And so now it's a completely different thing as it was 20 years ago, because 20 years ago, if you had that sort of thing, you were setting up a lawsuit and they were concerned about what you were really doing. Now, if you don't have it, they don't believe you because they think that you could have easily taken that evidence and you're trying to overemphasize what you could have taken a picture about. So it's really interesting how the practice has changed.
And I know you've mentioned before, too, another thing people can do is, you know, once they get start treating, either to not do that treatment consistent or just quit after a while.
Right. You have to follow the doctor's orders because the doctors are always looking out for your best interest and doing reasonable things to get you better. You know, it's very unusual for a doctor to set themselves up, especially folks that do testify in court, because after doctors have testified a few times in court about their treatment, they get a sense of what the defense will say about overtreatment or, you know, are you biased because, you know, you're getting some percentage of this lawsuit or those sorts of things. But generally speaking, doctors are there to make sure that their patients get well as quickly as possible. So they're going to give them instructions on what to do to make that happen. And if the person doesn't follow those instructions, it's fodder for the defense, because the defense is going to say, you hired this professional to give you advice about your medical care, and then you still didn't follow it. So why should a jury award you all of those benefits right. when you didn't actually do it correctly? And it gives them a reason for the jurors to go back in the jury room and say, well, you know, they're kind of right. Should this person get full value for their case when they don't even care about their own treatment?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they've, because the other argument is, well, maybe they've caused more harm by not doing the treatment that the doctor tells you to do, and so reduce the amount that they get because they've caused some of this injury themselves. And so in jury rooms anyway, they're fighting about how much should a plaintiff should get. Now you give them ammunition for the people that don't want to give you anything, why they should award nothing. And that's where people fall down, in the sense that the ones that are really disheartening for me is the folks that have had the opportunity to speak with a lawyer, and I get the case a year, year and a half later when they haven't treated very well, and they're still really hurting, and we've got to try to recreate things, but now it's a year and a half later. I mean, that again, what the immediate response from the defense is going to be, well, you must not have been that hurt because it took you a year and a half to really do anything about it. Mm-hmm. Because most rational people, if they're really hurt, they're going to go get medical care.
Sure.
Even though, you know, you can explain, well, economically, I didn't have health insurance. I was so busy at work, I just couldn't get to do it, and I thought it would go away over time, and time just slipped away. I mean, we're all busy. I get that. But jurors can also understand if you have real injuries and you're not treating for it, then how real are they?
Yeah.
In their mind.
Yeah,
because there's been a really good job on the part of insurance and other folks out there relating to these personal injury cases to suggest that there's a lot of malingering going on, that people are making up claims. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I would say that's probably less than 10% of the cases where that's going on. But that 10% really hurts the other 90% of the cases.
Yep.
And so people have to think about what they're doing.
Sure. It's the Legal Hour. We got another segment here with Kevin. Again, our lines are open. If you've got any kind of legal question, we'll take your call, 303-477-5600. This is Haystack Help Radio.
You were injured in an accident. You went to the doctor, and you thought your insurance would cover it. But that was before you realized how the insurance company actually works, and before you knew how long your pain would really last. So now you're stuck with a bunch of bills that you can't afford, and the nagging pain has been keeping you up all night, making you feel like you're going to lose your mind every day. You are not alone. There is an answer. Call Flesh & Beck Injury Attorneys. Flesh & Beck have the experience and the knowledge to navigate the complicated maze created by the insurance companies designed to minimize your claim. They will answer all of your questions and help you to determine if you are entitled to compensation for your pain and suffering. If you've been injured in an accident, call Flesh & Beck Injury Law at 303-806-8886 for a free consultation to find out if Flesh & Beck can help you get the compensation that you deserve.
Hi, this is Kevin Trisna, owner of M4 Roofing and Gutters. We work with your insurance company, and you can rest assured that your roofing project will be finished on time and on budget. We understand the difficulties and stress that damage to your home's roof can bring. Let the highly trained staff at M4 Roofing and Gutters come out and give you a free inspection and estimate for your roofing project. Call today, 303-797-8600. That's 303-797-8600. Or visit us online at m4roofing.com. M4 Roofing and Gutters is an A-plus member of the Better Business Bureau and haystackhelp.com.
Hi, this is Scott Watley. Let me tell you what I love about Stack Optical. They are truly one of the last optician-owned, family-owned optical stores. At Stack Optical, you can be confident you'll receive personal attention. For over 50 years, Alan Stack has shown he really cares about making his customers happy. Stack Optical also has a beautiful new location at 2233 South Monaco Parkway in Denver. Free and easy up-close parking. Stack Optical has an on-site eyeglass production lab. Whether you need office eyewear or a new set of shooting or golf glasses, Stack Optical has the solution with the Stack Sport Pack. Give them a call today and ask for their $69 eye exam, 303-321-1578. That's 303-321-1578. Your eyes and vision are one of the most important things in life. I'm confident at Stack Optical, you'll see the difference. That's 303-321-1578, stackoptical.com.
Rush to Reason with John Rush, weekdays from 3 to 7 on KLZ 560.
Welcome back to Haystack Help Radio. If you're just joining us, my name is Scott Watley, along with Kevin Flesh. It's been the Legal Hour, and a few more minutes left with Kevin. Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. I always tell you, put that number in your phone just in case you need it. We hope you don't, but when you need it, you need it. 303-806-8886. A few minutes left here, Kevin. So I thought we'd talk about one thing here with school starting back. First of all, everyone, just to really be alert of school zones.
Yes.
Are now going to be going. Yeah. So
right back in place.
Got to watch your speed there.
And double the fines.
Yes.
And there isn't a municipality in the state that will reduce those fines.
Really?
They'll reduce the points, but you always have to pay double the fines. So, yeah, I mean, it's substantial. I mean, I've had a number of cases where, you know, maybe it's a 4-point offense or a 6-point offense because you're maybe going 45, which is now a 20, so it's over 20.
Oh,
so you have to personally appear, or you have to have a lawyer. The ones I'm involved, obviously, the person's retained us. But then you go in and maybe we get it reduced to 2 points, a defective vehicle, but you still get the fines. You still get $150 times two. So it's $300 to $500 is what I normally see for those. So, and you don't want to hit a kid, obviously.
And, too, around these schools, I mean, you got to know there's going to be a lot of people just got their license.
Yep. Yes.
What do you tell? I mean, you've gone through this, your
I
girls
have.
And stuff. I mean, what's that conversation look like from an adult? It's been a while since I've had to have it. So, you know, they're going to be driving a vehicle and driving other people around. There are some laws on that, too.
After they get their license, they can't have another family member or child in the vehicle for the first 6 months while they're driving. There's so many accidents that happen in these parking lots of these high schools. The most important thing that I think is important for new drivers is all of these kids are so tied to their phones. is parents should tell them no phones, no way, no how, just period, no phones. And if you get into a fender bender, because what they'll do, my daughter's had this happen. She's at a stoplight. She's futzing with her phone at a stop sign or a stoplight. It turns green. She sees it's green, but the person in front of her hasn't moved. And then she's rear-ended the person in front of her because they haven't moved. You know, just pay attention.
Right.
I mean, it's a law. You can't be on no texting, but it's basically not on your phone. And let's face it, these phones these days. I just finished a criminal trial not too long ago. They can triangulate, and those phones provide data. So as long as you can establish that you have your phone, a person can tell you exactly where you're at or within 300 or 400 yards of where you're at any time. And so I have had that conversation with my kids about, listen, you're electronically tethered if you have this phone, and then we'll be able to tell when this accident happened and whether or not there was activity going on in the phone. And if there is, well, then you've got problems because your driving privileges in our household are going to go away because it'll be difficult for the authorities to spend the time on it, but we will because you're just not supposed to be doing it. Mm-hmm. And they're big vehicles. They can cause real harm, and you just got to pay attention. And you got to don't assume that the other person is paying attention. Yeah. I don't know how many you drive a lot too.
Oh,
I, within the last 60 days, I have been at stoplights where I have a green. And I look twice still and wait a couple of seconds sure. because I've had more people going through red lights where if I wasn't paying attention, I would have been T-boned. And I just, you know, none of us need that. And even though it's the other person's fault, just pay attention. Mm-hmm. Defensive driving, like they say, right?
And, I mean, weather's still beautiful here. We talked about this.
Motorcycles.
Motorcycles, too. I mean, and I didn't tell you this, but the Lakewood motorcycle officer that we both know. Did you see that was him the other day, the Lakewood cop?
No.
Officer that got hit.
Oh, really?
He got hit again, but supposedly is doing good.
I
pulled up next to a Lakewood officer the other day, and not just to say hi.
Right.
I wasn't visiting him for speeding or anything, and I asked him how he was doing. He said, you know, good.
Yeah. Doesn't help that you have that distinctive vehicle that you drive around.
Yes, exactly. But, man, motorcycles, again, you just got to be careful.
They do.
They're everywhere, and sometimes you hear them, you know, coming through the lanes. And there are states that allow that, I think, coming down the center white stripe.
Right.
We're not one of them.
We're not one of them. That's correct.
So motorcyclists, be aware of that.
Same thing with bicyclists. They have to follow the rules of the road, and sometimes they don't do that all the time. And so, but just pay attention. Mm-hmm. I mean, look twice, as the bumper sticker says. Yep. Make sure that you look around for those motorcyclists because they're still going to be around. I mean, before we know it, we're going to have snow flying, theoretically.
Sure.
So, but until then, make sure, especially motorcycle and bicyclists, and downtown Denver with these new bike lanes.
These scooters. I mean, we only got about 2 minutes here, but I mean, there's some personal injury stuff waiting to happen.
Yes, there is. And in those situations, especially with the scooters in the bike lanes, that's going to be an interest because I know Denver has gotten rid of the main company right now because of safety concerns. But I think they'll be back because they're all in these other big municipalities.
And all these kids got their earbuds in and doing stuff and not paying a lick of attention.
Right. I haven't heard as much over the last year or so about the folks in crosswalks getting hit.
Right.
But a lot of those, I think at least half of them, I would surmise were exactly that the pedestrians weren't paying attention either. And obviously, if you're in a crosswalk and you have a green man or the green arrow, you have the right of way, but you still got to look because, once again, people aren't paying attention sometimes. And if they're not, you don't want to get hit by a car because that's no fun. I mean, there are cases that we handle and there are cases that we try to get good results on, but the good results, again, are money and it's not getting your health back. And that's the biggest thing that people have to just keep your head on a swivel, especially when you're walking around downtown.
Yeah, for sure. Kevin, always great information. Good
Thank
to see you.
Good to see you.
Flesh and Beck Law, 303-806-8886. 303-806-8886. Give Kevin a call, and they'll be glad to help you out. Fleshlawfirm.com is the website. Thanks for joining us today for Haystack Help Radio. Be sure and check out our website, haystackhelp.com. As I mentioned earlier, our helpline is always there for you, 303-333-HELP, 303-333-4357. Hope you have a great rest of your day and leave it right here on KLZ 560.
views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.